BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Anita Arnand, and thank you for downloading BBC Radio 4's Any Answers, the sister programme to Any Questions.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Any Answers. We are at a crossroads, some say. And if we are, it is a crossroads where the past is colliding with the present. I'd really love to know what you think about the protests that have gone on this weekend and last weekend. We can talk about statues and slavery. Are protesters making history or breaking history when they tear down a statue? What do you make of those who are surrounding Winston Churchill's statue today? What did you think when Edward Colston was toppled into the water in Bristol? If you cheered it on, tell me why and tell me what happens next. And if you opposed it, then tell me, would you defend all British statues, no matter the lives they represent? 03700 100 444 is the number to call. We can talk about TV programmes and films. Do you take them out of circulation now for something they did then? Anything you want to talk about this, our doors are open. 03700 100 444, hashtag it BBCAQ, and we will find you on Twitter. Also, how should the government deal with the economic impact of coronavirus? There are calls for an emergency budget, but if you were the Chancellor of the Exchequer, what would be right at the top of your inbox? And how are you worried about the future? What do you need right now? And sticking with the pandemic, is it time to end the 2 metre rule? Would that help you? Should schools work over the summer to make up time lost right now because of the pandemic? Are you concerned about the R level? All of that up for grabs. And what do you think of a points-based immigration system? Best way to bring in the brightest and the best, or are we leeching talent from countries which need it most? The number, final time right now, 03700 100 444. You can email any.answers at bbc.co.uk, text 84844, or tweet using the hashtag BBCAQ. But let's start off, shall we, with those protests and what you think of them. Christopher Rose calling us from Leeston in Suffolk. You are our first caller. Very warm welcome to you, Christopher.
Hello, yes. I just had a point to make about Churchill, and obviously his reputation is bound to be contentious, as all major historical figures are, but he did do a remarkable amount personally to guarantee that there was no peace deal with Nazi Germany in the summer of 1940. And but for that, there's a big question mark over whether or not Hitler would have won the war, in which instance that would have been a disaster for the right of protest in many parts of the world, not least possibly the United Kingdom. So I do think that one has to consider the relative degree of Churchill's achievements in saving freedom on balance, given too that there are very stark contrasts between British society with all its faults and the societies that you find in China, for example, in contemporary world events, where they are colonising Africa in as much a way as we were perhaps doing 100 years ago, but probably wouldn't now be willing to leave in the way that we were.
So the heroism of Churchill during the war and his opposition to Halifax and appeasement, those things you know about and you're very, very proud of, and I can hear it. Did you know about the issues that now protesters are talking about his role in the Bengal famine, which, you know, you're talking about
millions of Marseilles. Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, yes,
were you aware of those things as well?
Yes, absolutely. Fully accept that. I mean, yes, Churchill warts and all, absolutely. But the point is that he nonetheless is on balance, has to be taken on balance. These things, as I say, nobody is whiter than white. Sorry about the phrase, that they're never going to be completely free of any kind of blemish. And for that reason, I think you cannot do this without effacing the nation's complete identity. And I do feel, too, that there's a sense of cynical manipulation by certain people who are leading the more violent end of this demonstration, using people who are perfectly right in thinking that they're serving a noble end, but are actually being used for a very narrow political agenda, which is akin to those that you saw with the Bolsheviks or the French revolutionaries after 1792, distorting something for their own ends. And they're not going to be interested in rational argument. And I can't help feeling that this is turning into something like extortion by menaces on the British state, which is going to lead to no sort of concession, which is not going to lead to further concessions being demanded. In other words, it's like a form of Danegeld. And if these statues go into museums, then the museums will be boycotted and they'll be attacked similarly until the thing has been reduced to a point where there can be no further resistance. It's a sort of, I think there's more intolerance on that side than there is from the British state. Let's face it, there are statues of Gandhi, there are statues of opponents, former opponents to the British, in central London. There are many. Smuts is an example of a leader of the Boers. There's Nelson Mandela, obviously. There's Gandhi himself. I think there are two statues of Gandhi. So in that sense, we do celebrate people. We do have a very tolerant attitude historically. And I think it's something of a distortion to suggest that the British state is not indeed a forgiving and tolerant regime
can
on
I
balance.
Ask you, can I think there's more good than that. Christopher, let me ask you this then. I mean, if you, at the beginning you were saying, look, you have to accept somebody warts and all. Yeah. And then you moved into we must give no quarter. So I'm just trying to reconcile both of those, statements together.
I don't say we don't give any
quarter. Let me ask you the question. So the question would be, I mean, I'm understanding from what you're saying, these statues must stay where they are, but what about putting that balance sheet of history, as you say, I think those were the terms that you used, in front of the statue so people can read it and take from it and formulate the opinion that they
nowadays, of all times in which we've lived, it's more open to anybody to look things up on the phone if they wish to and Google things.
Why not label the statue?
Freely available to people to be able to use
Christopher,
these
why not put it under a statue, though? What is the objection to putting it under a statue?
Well, you could do. I think it would be a bit laborious to have an enormous... Churchill's life would run to, has already been documented through 8 volumes by Martin Gilbert, and it runs to many millions of words. I think it would be more practical to refer people to actually read some history and do some research if they're that interested in looking at people on, monuments and memorials.
Okay, all right, thank you very much. Let's very good call to open up this discussion. Charlie Francis Pope is calling us from Dorset. Hello there.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Charlie. I'm very happy to be talking to you this afternoon. So what do you make of all of this? Are people right or wrong to be hung up about the balance sheet of history, shall we put it that way, of towering figures in the past? Sometimes towering just because they've got statues, but towering sometimes because of other things too. Tell me what you think.
Well, I have a rather interesting viewpoint on this, because I actually went to Colston Girls' School in Bristol, and Colston's statue was our statue. And I'm now 34, so it was some time ago, but every year, once a year, we had a celebration of his life, and we wore his favourite flower and laid it at the statue in celebration, which is really bizarre to now be reflecting upon that, because
did you know about him
then?
Did you know about his history then, as a small girl putting flowers by his statue?
Yeah, it was a weird juxtaposition in the school, because we were raised to be very open-minded. We were a multicultural school, and the first project you do on entrance to the school was a very large project. It took about a term, maybe half a term, about slave trade. So they were very open and transparent at the beginning. This is where the history of the school came from. But then there was still that celebration, which was just following tradition. So now this is all, this has all come to light. I'm really embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed by my history. Whereas before, I was quite proud to be raised by some fantastic teachers and educational leaders. So it's really, really bizarre.
Does that embarrassment? I mean, Bristol is replete with reminders of where a lot of money that built Bristol comes from. You've got Colston Hall. You've got statues. You've got your school.
Got some roads. 3 schools.
Tell me this though: does your discomfort stretch into maybe it is time to reevaluate whether this place has any room for statues like this, or do you think actually they must stay up? And I don't know, people should look it up on Wikipedia, as our last caller said, or there should be more informative plaques underneath statues such as this. What are you thinking about all that?
I think it should have... the renaming of the Colston Hall has been going on for a very long time, and I think that should have changed a very long time ago, and I think the statue should have been moved by the council. I think it's a really sad situation that this has happened now, coming from this very understandable anger and protest. But I think you made a really good point earlier that actually if they are in place where they are now, right in the centre of the city, it should acknowledge the history on it, or alternatively move them to another part of the city, like I think they do in some Eastern European countries. They acknowledge their past. I think the worst thing we can do is to get rid of them all and take them away, because then we're not acknowledging the horror of how Bristol became like a global trading at the time, trading city.
Okay.
And I think that's the worst thing we can do. We can't deny it.
Charlie, Thank you very much for your call. 03700 100 444. You know, it's an interesting thing because I love history and I'm very interested in history, and I knew, I had a vague knowledge of Colston. But I mean, the stuff that I've read subsequently about sort of branding of men, women and children with the initials RAC, I didn't know. I wouldn't have known until this was in the headlines. What do you make of that? And also, somebody mentioned Gandhi before. It's only right and proper to say he is also a figure who attracts a great deal of controversy because of some of his attitudes to black people too. Now, if he wasn't in the news or this wasn't in the news, would we be able to talk about that? 03700 100 444 is the number to call. Some thoughts from Claire here on the text. I think that unless you've been in a position where you've been on the receiving end of racial inequality, it's very difficult to imagine the stress that this places you under. The microaggressions are a sign of a lack of understanding, not necessarily intentional discrimination. However, that doesn't mean that they have no effect on the receiver. Changing society takes time, but a younger political class might help, or more dual heritage members who have a wider experience and understanding of the present group. Jack says, we need to stop these fascists destroying our culture, our history, our statues, our monuments. What do we pay the police for? Certainly not to kneel to racists. You don't beat racism by kneeling to racists or blaming just one race for everything that is wrong. Richard Hailston is calling us from Swindon in Wiltshire. Richard, hello, good afternoon.
Hello, yeah.
Hi, what did you want to say? What did you want to say, Richard? Yeah, it's all
well,
yours.
Well, I think the this business of pulling down statues and so on is distracting from the message of Black Lives Matter, which is about making sure that today things are equal for everybody. I think looking back at the past and trying to rewrite history is a distraction from the message. And you only got to look at what's happening today in London. You've got rival demonstrations taking place, people who want to defend the statues and people who want to deface them and so on. That's these things started off as peaceful demonstrations. I feel that the demonstration in Bristol last week was taken over by extremists. And since then, the whole message has been distorted by this business of let's remove statues of this person or that person because of what they did in the past.
Mm-hmm. There's a text here, an email rather, that is agreeing with you, Deborah Clark, saying a black man dies brutally at the hands of a white cop. The debate is about the inequality of black lives in the police and justice system, the inequality of black lives in our institutions, about systematic institutional racism in the USA and in the UK. And yet for the last week, the media has been concerned about statues or whether Fawlty Towers should be on the TV. These minor issues are part of the debate, but it sickens me that the mainstream media and politicians have chosen to concentrate on this because it's easier and more comfortable to let white-led institutions talk about this rather than the bigger issues of systemic racism in our country. I mean, Deborah's talking about a systemic racism. Is that something that you believe exists in this country?
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in the 50s, and I believe that Britain at that time was a very racist society. And I remember as a young child at school on Empire Day walking around the playground waving flags and so on. And there was it was endemic then that, you know, that white people were superior. But that's all changed now, hasn't it? It shouldn't be. I think most people today regard everybody as equal, and everybody should be treated as equal.
Mm. Thank you very much for your call. Elizabeth Garner is calling us from Halifax. Hello.
Hello, hello, Anita. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, no, it's quite a pleasure to have you, Elizabeth. Go on. Yes, what would you like to say?
Yeah, it was to do with the Colston statue. I think it's impossible to whitewash history, and I agree with a former caller who indicated that there should be plaques, you know, there should be information which present two sides of a person's life and achievement. Whilst Colston was clearly just revered, he was described as a virtuous and good man. Why wasn't there an alternative commentary about his contribution to the triangular slave trade?
Somebody hinted at this earlier. There were many attempts over many years to put something, a neighbouring plaque talking about his. There was no mention of slavery at all on that statue.
Exactly.
They could never agree on the wording, therefore it never happened.
Well, it's the same thing about Churchill's contribution to the Bengal famine. People don't know, you know, they're not necessarily going to access history books and Wikipedia, but the immediacy of a commentary about his contribution to the Bengal famine, a plaque, it's immediate information. It's a very powerful learning tool, I think, for children, particularly as a form of...
But there are some people who say, look, that's giving an equivalence to the heroism of the man, which saved, you know, the free world, and the things... And I'm just paraphrasing some of the things that come into me over a week, and the fact that he held views which were consistent with the day. So why would you want to put that on a plaque underneath... and he's referred to here in a number of texts that I've got, underneath the great man... It says,
well, yeah, he was a great man, and I accept that I probably wouldn't be. I'm of dual heritage. I accept that I might not have been here if Hitler had triumphed. However, he did these things, and I think, you know, people do feel myself from a BAME background, I am incensed about the triangular slave trade and the legacy that has, as I am about modern day slavery. But people don't know unless they're actually told. And he did these things. It's, for example, if we were to erect a statue in favour of Robert Mugabe, how would we balance that out? Would we say he was a wonderful man because he claimed back Rhodesia and, you know, he came back to Zimbabwe from Rhodesia? Look what he's done to his own people.
Can I ask you this? I mean, you talked about dual heritage, and you can tell me if you want to or not tell me if you don't want to, but what is the heritage that makes Elizabeth Garner who she is?
My father came over with the Windrush generation, although not on that particular ship. He came over to Britain from Jamaica in the 50s, and he married my mother, who was and is, actually, he's died now, but is a formerly a white East Ender, and she stood shoulder to shoulder with him through some very, very difficult times. I mean, you know, the 50s were a time when the N-word was used frequently, when they were insulted on the street, and I'm very proud of that heritage, but I really do think that you can't whitewash history. I mean, for example, I've visited Auschwitz-Birkenau on two occasions, and at the end of the acreage that Birkenau is on, there's a plaque indicating what a terrible place it is. I mean, that's clearly understatement. But if that isn't there, if people aren't there, if the images aren't there, and images are a very powerful learning tool, being able to visit a place, being able to see a person, then we are deprived of understanding, I think, what humans...
Can I ask you one final thing? I mean, it's very interesting. You just said, you know, your mother stood by your father in some really horrific times, and particularly you made mention of the N-word. Now, this is something that's relevant today. If you listen to our news bulletins, there's an awful controversy about Fawlty Towers at the moment, a much-loved institution, I would go as far as to say, of comedy in this country. One of the episodes has been pulled by one network, not the BBC, I don't think, it's the UK TV network. And everybody's thinking it's the Don't Mention the War episode, and everyone, I think, or a lot of people are under the impression that it's about the Don't Mention the War and jokes about Hitler and Germany. But there is actually a bit in that, and I believe that is the reason that it has been pulled, where language akin to the N-word and other words like it are used by the major, the character in it. Now, should they have pulled it, Elizabeth Garner, or should they have left it as it was?
I think it's an excellent study in the individuals like the major. But what that brought up for me was the fact that not all Germans were Nazis, you know.
I understand, but just tell me about that one particular bit, which I think is the reason that it was pulled. And, you know, it's the Black Lives Matter campaign has brought this all to the fore and is making big institutions and big corporations think about what they are putting out there. So on the strength of that, on the strength of the major uttering those words, should that episode be edited in a way that is not heard anymore? Should it be aired exactly as it was meant to be aired? I mean, what should happen to that particular bit with the particular word that you said was particularly hurtful to your family, to your dad?
Well, that should be edited, I think, but surely it says more about the major and the time that he's a product of.
Then why edit it? Then why take it out at all?
Yeah, it's difficult. I don't know. That's something I need. More debt, but I must say I think it was ironic seeing Colston being kicked down into the river. However, to what extent does that deprive people of a learning opportunity about the realities of people who were seen as good and virtuous, what they were really up to, you know, of slavery? And I think you can't whitewash the past.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for your call. 03700 10444, the number to call. Let's go to Jonathan Baldwin, who's calling us from Nantwich in Cheshire. Hello.
Good afternoon. I'd like to raise the question of the statue of Cecil Rhodes over at Oriel College, Oxford.
Sure.
I don't think it should come down, I should say. But if it does come down, is it correct for the students of Oriel College, Oxford, to continue to use the comfort and the warmth and the coziness of that building, which was paid for with his money? When he was made an honorary doctor of law, I've downloaded it off from the website this morning, at the dinner at Oriel after receiving his doctorate, Rhodes heard of the college's then poor financial situation and offered to leave them £100,000 in his will. Well, in modern days, money, that's the thick end of £13 million.
Mm-hmm.
And £40,000 of that was used to finance the construction of a new building on the High Street.
Okay.
So if you can't stand the man's statue over the front door, how can you possibly stand going inside and being a beneficiary of something that was built with his money?
So there are those who might direct your attention to more modern examples of very controversial figures who have raised an awful lot of money for charity.
Yeah.
Let's just say, I mean, it's not an equivalence because we're talking about very different things right now, but let's say someone like Jimmy Savile, who had raised in his life a lot of money for charity, but people find the way that he behaved abhorrent. First of all, let's start with Rhodes. I mean, do you find that his attitudes and behaviours were acceptable? I mean, that's the scale we have to sort of work out first of all, or perfectly fine, in which case this conversation doesn't go much further. But if you do object to what he believed in, or people do object, then they might say, well, look, you know, nobody's suggesting that Stoke Mandeville Hospital or any other hospital gives back the money because it came from that conduit, but it doesn't mean we put a statue up to the man.
No, but you know, no one is going to pull down a statue of Jimmy Savile. What I'm saying is that the statue of Cecil Rhodes should stay because people will want to continue to use the building which was built with his money. And then if Cecil Rhodes is so bad his statue must come down, surely all the future Rhodes scholars, of which there are, I think, about 35 a year...
Okay.
Won't have access to that scholarship. Now, one of your panels last night was indeed a Rhodes scholar, and she said that she couldn't have possibly, from her comparatively modest upbringing in Miami, have possibly got to Oxford without the benefit of being a Rhodes scholar. But if it's wrong to have the man's statue, it's wrong to continue to use to benefit from his money.
So you cannot ever separate. You cannot not ever separate the man, whatever man that is, from money that comes from him. That's just never. You're never able to do that. Accept his views, or just accept that the statue goes with the money.
Accept that his views were acceptable in those days. As it said at the bottom, he held late Victorian ideals of public service, institution building, and the importance of an educated ruling class.
Well, it doesn't say anything about racial superiority, which is another thing that he believed in. I mean, that's not there on the plinth, is it?
Well, that's not there on the website either. I don't know. I'm only quoting what I downloaded from the Oriel College.
Well, maybe, I mean, perhaps that's what some people are objecting to, I think. Isn't that what they're objecting to? That if you have a plinth at the base of a statue of a controversial person, you have to inform people that there is a controversy.
Yes, well,
if you don't see it, you can't look into it, can you? As somebody else said, you know, everyone's free to look it up on Wikipedia, but if you're not even aware that there is something to look up, who would look it up?
I accept entirely. I'm certainly not against explaining more fully what went on, but I would just, to all those protesters, I would just ask this one question. Can you be sure that your moral values of today will be acceptable in 100 or 200 years' time? And I think the answer to that one is that they probably won't be.
Okay, there Jonathan, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
You've posed a very interesting question, which I'll immediately throw to our next caller. Stephen Ross Talbot is calling from West Sussex. Stephen, didn't we talk to you last week, didn't we?
Yes, I closed your show for you.
You did, and we ran out of time, and you were sort of, you know, making some very interesting points. So, look, we just had another caller who passionately says, you know, how do you know you're right? How do you know history is going to judge you as being right? And Cecil Rhodes must stand. What do you say?
I think it's the wrong debate. You know, I think the debate, I mean, it's all arose out of Black Lives Matter. Why is it called that? Because black lives don't matter. They don't matter as much as white lives. So in this country, twice as many white people go to top universities compared to black people. Twice as many people from ethnic minorities live in poverty compared to white people. And I haven't even gone down that you're twice as likely to die in police custody in the UK, and you're 50 times more likely to be stopped and searched. Black lives don't matter. That's why the slogan's there, and we're talking about statues. It kind of, what I find absolutely stunning about this is I could have probably written the book for this, and that is that whenever white society is challenged at its core for what it has done, we get this response. We get, but all lives matter. But people are vandalising a statue. But all the while that's going on, there's less people going to university that are black, and there's more people that are living in poverty that are black. And that's the issue. That's where the debate needs to be. It shouldn't be about these petty things. They will come out in the wash. But the central thing here is Black Lives Matter.
You're saying that they are petty things. So would you say that, I mean, to some people, they're very, very important. There was somebody from the Black Lives Movement who was on the Today programme today saying that, yes, no, it matters a lot. Others saying, you know, you will never understand what it is to walk underneath the statue of a slave every day of your life if you are a black person. You don't know what that feels like. To some, it's not petty. To others, they will say, look, you know, that we're starting off with the premise that Britain is inherently racist, and people will reject that. They will say, look, I'm not racist. I'm white, but I'm not racist. I don't see what this has to do with me, to my society. And you run the risk of losing allies over this. What do you say to them?
I think what needs to happen concretely is the debate needs to be had. And, you know, black leaders and people from the black community need to be, they need to sit round a table, both locally and nationally, and determine what should happen. So if Bristol decides overwhelmingly that all statues that that somehow have some slave aspect to them that we now recognise, well, maybe they should decide what happens to those statues collectively and with empathy for the black and ethnic minority communities there and with respect as equals. That black lives do matter.
We spoke to you last week. A week is a long time in politics and in life in general at the moment. Do you regret any of the way in which the Black Lives Matter campaign has unfolded, or is it down to the reporting of it, or is it down to the reception for it? Has anything surprised you over the last 7 days?
I would say two things have surprised me. The first thing is a personal thing, in that some members of my wider family, I mean, I'm a very multicultural family. I might be black British, but my wife's English. And within the wider family group, there's been a big discussion about Black Lives Matter. And in the end, I ended up saying to one of my family members in a discussion about all lives matter versus Black Lives Matter, I was trying to make exactly the point I've made now. He couldn't get it, alas. And he asked me a question, and I said, yes, you are whatever his name is. I won't mention his name. And you know, you're this relation to me. And yes, you are white. And he unfriended me because I said he was white.
Yes, you are. You said he was white.
He is white.
Okay.
Ethnically, he's white. So why do white people do that?
He unfriended you because you said he was white.
Yes.
Okay,
because
I'm not sure.
In his world, there's no colour. Well, there is.
Okay, right.
I'd love to start from a world with no colour, but there is colour. So let's work with that. What's okay, important here is that the debates had. I can't say any more than that.
You said there were two things. You said that, so that was one thing. Very briefly, what was the second? Because I've got a lot of comments.
The second thing is just how much variations on All Lives Matter has covered social media. To All Life Matters, All Lives Matter. And that is simply a distraction from the fact that, and it is a fact, that black lives do not matter as much as white lives.
Okay.
Whether we like that or not. And the debate needs to be had about that.
Thank you for calling. 03700 100 444. Paul Anderson from Solihull. Can we please stop discussing the symptom, pulling down statues ad infinitum, and discuss the root cause? There's a frustration with an unjust system euphemistically described as democratic. Surely any system that takes over 10 years to implement the obvious compromise of adding an explanatory plaque to a statue is not fit for purpose. He's talking about the Causton statue. Who else would put up with such a delay? This supposedly democratic system needs to be fixed. Another here, to deface the statue of Sir Winston Churchill is the epitome of ignorance, but for his inspirational leadership, not only Britain but the world would have been enslaved by a truly brutal tyranny. It's a poor reflection on our system of education that such ignorance can be so prevalent. Another here, at a time of pandemic, I think it's utterly irresponsible for people to think they're okay to break social distancing regulations in order to demonstrate if black lives matter, how many more black lives will be lost as a direct result of COVID-19 being transmitted through these demonstrations. Another call. Mary Kelly is calling us from Princess Risborough. Hello, Mary. Hi.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. What did you want to say, Mary?
Well, first of all, just wanted to give you some background where I'm coming from. I'm first generation Irish immigrant, so we came over here some time ago. We were brought up in Kilburn. There were 27 of us living in one house, sharing one toilet, no bathroom. So that's my background. We've moved a long way from that. Living in Princess Risborough. I suppose what I wanted to say was that there's two important things. Why I'm no longer living in a house with 27 other people is through education and through taking advantage of our democratic processes. So as a family, we thought being able to vote was both an obligation and privilege. So we were able to influence the people who governed us, I suppose, and also take advantage of the education. So all my children went to university, and my eldest daughter was the first person in our family who went to university. So what I'd say to people who want to pull down statues is change things through education, taken advantage of education, and change things through vote, get out there, make your opinion known and valued, and influence what's happening. So make everybody's life matter, and of course black lives do matter, as do Irish lives, and that wasn't always the case. You know, back in the middle of the 19th century, millions of Irish people died through the famine, at a time when the British government were exporting food to the Caribbean islands to feed slaves, which is, you know, doubly dreadful. So we do have a history, the Irish do have a history, but it wouldn't have helped us to go and daub the statue of Queen Victoria or Churchill or Cromwell. It's not about looking into the past, it's about looking into the future. It's about making life better for us, for yourself, for your children, for your grandchildren. I go back again, vote, make a difference, make your voice heard, and take advantage of the education so that you're not at the bottom of the pile.
So let me just put one point, which our friend who just called up a little moment ago said, look, Mary, I think your radio might be on because I can hear myself, which is never.
No, it's not.
Well, Mary, what I was going to ask you was that, you know, he was saying that actually opportunities in education are demonstrably different if you are black and if you are white. So your idea of, look, take advantage of education at its very root is stymied, according to some who get in touch with the programme, that it isn't equal, that there isn't equal opportunity, that you know, the Kelly family could work their way up in a way that other families cannot work their way up because of structural inequality.
But yeah, they had structural inequalities. I mean, as an Irish Catholic back in the early 60s, you know, it wasn't easy, and it became much more difficult during the Troubles. And, you know, having an Irish name, it wasn't always a Kelly, but I've always had an Irish name. And somebody said to me once, "You're Irish, aren't you?" And I said, "How can you tell?" He said, "Because you all look alike." So there is that thing. There is that thing. I agree with that. You know, there is an inequality in education, and that needs to be addressed. But there was inequality in education for me and for my family because we were Irish. You know, we were expected to be cleaners, to be builders, to be labourers. You know, we were Paddy and Bridie to everybody. You know, we had a communal name. But it doesn't help to look back. For your children, you need to look to the future and you need to take advantage.
I'm very grateful for your call. Thank you very much indeed. 03700 100444. Diane, we can agree that we can do nothing about the injustices of the past, but it would be so good if we can make a difference to the many people who are being held in slavery everywhere, in the UK where it is more covert, or in many countries where there is a thriving slave trade. It would be so refreshing and inspiring if any of the leaders of Black Lives Matter turn their attention to those they can help. That's a protest I would happily join. Evelyn says, instead of erecting public statues to glorify an individual person, I would prefer the achievement or event they were part of to be honoured and commemorated in a permanent art form which we could all relate to, take pride in and enjoy. We have a wealth of creative talent in this country. I would welcome seeing more of it in public spaces. The statues that are currently causing offence to some people would be placed in museums, along with explanations of modern-day values and thinking. These could be updated by future generations to become a valuable document of development and change to UK cultural thinking. Another one here. Suzanne Olsen, pull the thing from the river, leave the ropes and damage intact, put it down somewhere lying on its side and install a new plaque to say how and why the statue was pulled down. Leave it to rust away over time for all to see. Black Lives Matter. Let's take another call on this. Toby Aloke from Walsall. Toby, I hope I said your surname correctly. I'm sorry, I haven't...
Yeah, you said it correctly. Yeah, I'm perfect.
I'm glad.
Thank you.
Welcome to the programme, Toby. What did you want to say?
There's kind of two main points that I just want to talk about in terms of how I feel about the statue situation, but also about the way that oppression and racism generally is taught in this country. The main issue that I have with the debate about the statues, okay, yes, the statues aren't necessarily all the debate. Like, people need to understand that the statues are a part of the debate about why Black Lives Matter. The simple fact is that for me, if you have a statue of someone who has committed atrocities up there, at the same time they're being commemorated for the great things that they've done, you can't use that statue commemorating all the great things they've done to ignore all the atrocities that they still committed. You know, in the same way you wouldn't have Jimmy Savile statue in front of a children's hospital, or you wouldn't expect, you know, people who lived during World War II in Nazi Germany, you know, to have a shrine of Hitler in their front living room even, or even in the middle of Berlin, saying how he made them feel empowered as Germans to actually do something and change their lives. Like, if the Germans put up a statue of Hitler today in Berlin, that would be absolutely mind-blowing to people. But at the same time, if you have people who made their wealth off of slavery, you know, and it's not just slavery, you know, slavery means different things to different people. You know, you can think of it today as human trafficking, human rights abuse, and a lot of physical pain and suffering, the separation of families. They made their wealth off of that. One of your callers before said that, you know, we enjoy these institutions today and we enjoy these innovations, and that's fine, that's great. But the problem is that at the same time, the horrible things that have happened aren't being taught to people. People think that these are still amazing people that did wonderful things 24/7, and that's not true. And so the thing is that if people aren't being re-educated about that, you can see how this feeds into a system, into a future system where you have all of these people who have done horrible things in their lives, but no one knows about it, apart from the people that are being told.
So a question that I asked another caller, which was, you know, today in the news, there are a group of men, I believe it was sort of numbering the hundreds, according to the bulletin, who are now surrounding Churchill's statue because they feel that Churchill's statue may well be attacked after it was daubed with graffiti last week. First of all, do you have sympathy with those who daubed the statue? Let's start from there, and then we can take it from there. What do you think about that? When somebody daubed racist under Winston Churchill's statue, what do you feel about that?
I do have sympathy in the sense that there are people who, looking at the statue, understand fully that there are other people that don't understand why that statue is so hurtful and painful to them, and how this feeds into the system. At the same time, I agree in the way that it started a discussion, and the fact that now we're taking another look into that history, fully understanding and fully critiquing and understanding why the statue is there and what it means to people. I think this is the most important thing. At the same time, having this discussion is very important to understanding, you know, what do we value in today's society.
But attacking somebody who's seen as the father of the nation, does that not, again, there are people who will say, look, I'm not racist. I'm not. And I believe everybody should have the same opportunities. But you go and attack a Churchill statue, then you are attacking what I care about. And you lose allies over that.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I do understand that, and that's fully true. But at the same time, if you're sympathising with a Churchill statue to the point that, you know, it really offends you, but you're not listening to why that offends someone else, then you're also part of the problem. You know, it's kind of like, say, for example, if one of your family members turned out to have committed an absolutely horrible crime, absolutely terrible crime, but you're there defending them 24/7, despite the fact that they've caused a lot of turmoil for another family to go through and grieve with, you know, would you want to defend that? Or do you think that it's fair for you to defend it so vehemently and so angrily and so emotionally, when in reality there are also people who are suffering because of that same person, you know?
Okay. Toby, thank you very much indeed for your call. John Weatherall. So we started with raising awareness of BAME and racism. Now we're discussing Churchill's statue. Can any of these so-called activists see what they've achieved? You don't win a war by burning a few enemy flags. You beat the enemy, then you burn all their flags. John, I'm not sure. Write back and explain that last bit of the statement a bit more clearly. Rosie says, I've been living in the UK for 10 years now, but I come from a country where some powerful business people or figures in the government rob the nation of their rights and wealth, then do charitable acts using the money they stole through corruption. I always found it bizarre that many people in my country cannot see that this money, this money they are thanking the corrupt businessmen for is actually theirs. It's not their right. It's not a gift. I believe it's the same case with the Rhodes Scholarship. Rhodes made his fortune from trading in slavery. Therefore, it's only fair that his fortune is used for the benefit of people whom he robbed this fortune from in the first place. Recipients of this scholarship are not receiving a gift. It is their right. 03700 100 444. Jill Benson is calling us from Dorking in Surrey. Hello, Jill.
Hello. Some of this has already been said, but I'll just run through it. It's regarding the defacing and smashing of statues. I find it very sinister indeed when people try to whitewash, or is it blackwash, history. It's very Brave New World. It smacks of fascism, communism and oppressive regimes. If we don't know where we come from, i.e. history, how can we know where we're going? I'm very disturbed by the mob removing, defacing historic statues in Bristol and London. If they don't like them, then why don't they pay for another statue telling another side of the story, a far more intelligent and grown-up response?
I mean, you say whitewashing history or blackwashing history, and I see what you did there. But why?
I think
but
I'm
if
the
you
first one to say that, perhaps.
Yeah. but if you are, I mean, if you are very keen for history to be valued, then why would you not be all for having the full story to be told about a person? Because now, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we do know we have. We have
Absolutely.
Historians
Sorry,
who can
if I
produce.
Can just interrupt you there. I'm quite happy. Perhaps I didn't make it clear, but I'm quite happy for another side of the story to be told. And I think perhaps a plaque signposting people to a museum, giving them the idea that there is another side of this story, perhaps on some of these statues. Absolutely.
But on the Causton statue. So let's take the Causton statue as an example.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just take, and then let's test it. I love testing theories because I don't have the answers and I want to know. So right
go on
the Causton statue.
Yes.
Yes, Mrs. Doyle. Go on. With the Causton statue, there were attempts over a great number of years through the correct channels to say, look, we cannot have a statue of this man in particular, who has made his fortune from the selling of men, women and children, from branding men, women and children across the chest with hot irons as if they're animals. We cannot have a statue to this man without mentioning slavery at all. And they went through for years and years and years asking for this, and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I think it
should happen, but I don't believe in the bringing down of statues for the reasons I've stated before. I understand that.
No, but that that's loud and clear. So let's just test the theory, if you don't mind, just a tiny
absolutely,
bit more.
Yeah.
Okay, so when it comes to Churchill, who was the person that we were talking about just a little bit earlier?
Yeah.
You know, some people are shouting at me saying, why didn't you say what he said that was so objectionable? Okay, so would it be okay to have a statue of Churchill, but then also to have a side plaque next to it saying some people object to his behaviour during the Bengal famine, which cost hundreds of millions of lives, or to remind people of some of the things that he said about people, that he hated people with slit eyes and pigtails, or that he didn't think that black people were as capable or as efficient as white people. These are quotes taken from a biography of Churchill by Richard Toy. Should we have that actually on a plinth, on a plaque, front and centre?
Maybe you'd have it on the back.
I'm sorry?
Maybe you could have it on the back of a statue.
I don't know.
It needs to be thought about. I think maybe something about the Bengal famine, actually.
I don't think it's possible to have the other thing
that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think you need committees of non-white people and white people to talk about this, but not take 10 years over it and not chuck things into the river. I mean,
okay.
We see the Taliban topple things. It mm-hmm. feels like that. I also wanted to say, regarding, if I may, move on to the TV programme censorship business.
Please do.
I mean, I'm a great fan of Fawlty Towers and also Rising Damp. Which have been criticised in the past. But, of course, the thing about Rising Damp is that almost the cleverest person in that is the black guy. Mm. I mean, he's certainly far cleverer than Rigsby. And I feel that this has been brought up in the past. There's a huge misunderstanding of the complexities of satire and irony.
Is it satire and irony? Just to talk about the Fawlty Towers one, because I love Fawlty Towers too, and I really do. You know, when you started, when I turned on the radio and I heard the controversy about it, I thought it was about, because everyone said it was the Don't Mention the War episode, But it isn't. It isn't.
It's about
something
the
Major says. It's about the N-word and words like it that the Major uses very casually. Very, very kind, and it goes nowhere else. Is that okay to leave that in?
I was very impressed by the lady who rang before I did, who said that she thought it was of its time, and it is actually almost could be used as a teaching tool as a way way people used to look at it.
I just wanted to take your temperature on that, so thank you very much for that. Thank you for being so very open. The concern about lifeless statues is a complete sideshow, distracting from the real issues of Black Lives Matter. Politicians and press can avoid the tough debate about race in favour of outrage about damage to monuments that drowns out concerned black voices, writes one contributor. Obi Igbo is calling us from London. Obi, welcome to the programme.
Hello.
Did you want to say? I think sort of agreeing maybe with the last tweet that I read out. So what do you think about the calls that we've had so far on this and the events of the last 7 days?
I think that some of the people that have been on your show have expressed reasonable views. I think that not all statues should be torn down just because the person lived a less than a great life. It's about context, and I think that should be considered. Churchill had racist views. Churchill did some despicable things. But Churchill also helped this country, saved many soldiers, put his reputation on the line, and brought about the end of Nazi Germany, or helped to, at least, I should say. Does that deserve a statue? Maybe. Maybe we should start divorcing ourselves from lumping everything into some pot without any kind of context. There's a great quote from George R. R. Martin, who created Game of Thrones, and one of his characters says, the good does not negate the bad, nor the bad negate the good. Each has its own reward. Mm-hmm. So I'm black. I've got no problem with Churchill's statue existing. Plus, his effigy stands for more than just him. You know, it stands for, I don't know, the country's its attitude during the war. It's attitude that they weren't going to, you know, lie down and take it. So yeah.
Can I test the theory with you? I did it with Jill. So sure. let me do it with you as well. So Obi, you're talking about Churchill. Well, what about Colston, who did some, I mean, as you say, you know, some people are complex, did some despicable things, presided yeah. over a despicable idea of slavery, but gave a lot of money to philanthropy that improved the lives of others and that has created a great city like Bristol. So in the balance sheet of history, what do you do with Colston's statue?
You have a sensible debate about it.
We're having the debate, but what do we do with the statue? Exactly. We're kind of in the debate now.
Personally, I've seen his statue dumped in a river. Didn't really affect me because A, I'm not from Bristol, and B, I know some of the despicable things that he did, and you know I don't miss it, basically. However, there's plenty of people that can be lauded and statues made of them, you know, but there's also no reason necessarily to just get rid of history. And a statue could be removed, as some people suggested, put it in a museum. Maybe mm-hmm. put a plaque in the context. I've got no problem with any of that. But mm-hmm. what I do have a problem with is people denying that an issue exists.
Grateful. I want to fit in two more calls. You've got minutes left of this even extended programme. Thank you, Radio 4. But, never enough time. Steve Balding is calling us from Shropshire. Hood Shaker is calling us from Manchester. I'm going to do my very best to at least fit you two, and I know there are others waiting, but let's see how we go. Steve, what did you want to say?
Yes, I just wanted to make the point, and all credit to the BBC here, that right from the late 50s, early 60s, the BBC was way ahead of the field in having shows like To Kill Death Us Do Part and 40 Towers, and That Was the Week That Was, and so on, in which were gut-wrenchingly funny in the comedy, but of course were also bitterly satirical and were actually advancing, in my opinion, social attitudes considerably over that period about racism, about sexism, about homophobia, and so on, because they were setting up these caricature characters, Basil Fawlty, the Major, Alf Garnett in Till Death Us Do Part, as terribly bigoted Little Englanders, and they were setting up as figures of fun. And I think the vast majority of people watching it got what the point was, which was by making fun of them in such an incredibly clever and funny way, they were actually shooting down in flames the attitudes they were representing, which were still quite widespread at the time. And it's my honest belief that Till Death Us Do Part particularly advanced social attitudes and advanced the cause of anti-racism massively during the 60s.
Okay.
And this is worth mentioning that it was written by Johnny Spate, who was a very left-wing activist and anti-racist. The star was Warren Mitchell, who was a Jewish actor and someone whose family had suffered in the Holocaust. And they had no objection to setting up this terrible character, Alf Garnett, who was loud-mouthed, racist, bigoted, and so on.
And I'm very glad that you made the point. It's not often that we get a praising BBC call in the last few minutes of the programme. Hood Shaker, what did you want to say?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I wanted to make two points. One, I mean, my parents are immigrants and I was born here. I think this country, with all its faults, is one of the most tolerant in the world. There is racism. It exists. And I think what Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, tweeted was great. He said, you know, change takes time. It didn't happen overnight. So I do think we should be grateful for what we have and just work to improve it. And if people do feel marginalised and discriminated against, then we need to make those changes to make them feel less discriminated against. My second point is, I think that, you know, tearing down statues of men who are racist at their time, or even by any standard are racist, is easy, but it doesn't actually make any significant change, it doesn't make any progress, whereas making changes that actually help people who are marginalised feel less marginalised, bring them up in society, help poor people is hard. So I think it's easy enough to say, let's tear down these statues. That's easy. Mm-hmm. But no change has happened. You know, nothing is progress because of that. Okay. So I think people need to look back and think what concrete changes that they can actually make rather than just burning books and tearing down statues.
Hood, got it. Nigel Kerridge, I didn't think we'd get you in, but we will. A minute to go, Nigel. What did you want to say?
I wanted to say that I think tearing down the items of history is irrelevant. We need to keep history in view. History itself is littered with examples of cultures that lost sight of examples from history and made the same mistakes again. Okay. What we need to do is, as the last caller just said and previous ones have said, mm-hmm. prejudice is not maintained by statues. It's maintained mm-hmm. by administrative negligence, extreme views that ignore realities and social immobility.
Okay. All right, Nigel, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Flora has written this. Nelson Mandela took a conciliation stance in relation to the Rhodes Scholarship. Presumably Oriel is terrified of setting a precedent. Personally, I'd get rid of that statue in a heartbeat, but if that isn't going to happen, why not set up a statue of Mandela next to Rhodes on a taller plinth as a way of putting a monster in his place without erasing history? That's it. Same time next week.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of Any Answers. Don't forget, if you want to hear any questions or you'd like to invite the programme to your venue, then please go to the BBC Radio 4 website and search for Any Questions. I'm Anita Arnand. Thank you for listening.